Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
Darkness, my old friend, I've come to talk with you again, because a vision softly creeping left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted in my brain still remains within the sound of silence.
That was Disturbed, and their take and their cover tune of Sounds of Silence by, of course, Paul Simon.
And now I feel disturbed.
As well you should, because you actually are disturbed, but you don't say it very often. Okay. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina, your host, in studio tonight with my sometimes... co-host, Russ Avison.
Hello, hello.
And we have some guests in the studio this evening. We'll get around to them in just a minute. I have to say that I know you didn't go, but the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival was last weekend, and Richard and I spent Friday, Saturday, and Sunday out there.
I had a spur injury, and I
don't blame you. But it was interesting because the festival. Oh no, you can turn that off. Thank you. The festival was free this year because it was the 25th anniversary. However, the count was down. We had 11 authors there all weekend.
What do you usually have?
Usually 11 or 12. So we had a full house.
Yeah. And but the count for the count attendees?
The attendance was way down. I was surprised. And so was Santa Clarita.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you usually have?
I don't know. But I know we had a lot more traffic than we've had in the past.
Huh.
So it was pretty sad. But we had an author come in from New Mexico. His name is Johnny Bonds, or Johnny Boggs. He was on the show with me one night.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling me a story Sunday morning. This is very cute. He was telling me a story Sunday morning about he was a little on the hammered side, and he was leaving a restaurant, walking out to his car, and some guy walks up to him and grabs him and goes, "Hey, you're freaking Stephen King." And he goes, "No, I'm really sorry. I'm not Stephen King. I'm Johnny Boggs." And he goes, "No, there's freaking Stephen King." So he finally got rid of the guy, and he goes back to his hotel, and he comes in the next morning, and he tells me his story.
Right.
So, like, for 2 hours, I'm just waiting.
Yeah.
And I finally got the right kid. And I call him over to our table, and I say, "Hey, you want to make $10? And he goes, "Yeah."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Go see that guy with that shirt over there with the orange cowboys on it?" And he goes, "Yeah." I said, "Go over and ask him if his name is Stephen King." And he did. And we have it on video.
Did he look right back at you? And
Yeah. But the entire tent was cracking up. It was pretty funny. And Johnny Crawford was right next door to us.
Oh.
And he was in our tent all day, both days. So it's kind of cool. He's kind of like has Alzheimer's now.
Ah.
So he doesn't remember much, but it's kind of cool. He was walking around talking.
So you could have done anything and you wouldn't have any consequences to it.
Never would have known.
Yeah.
Never would have known. He probably forgot it was Cindy's birthday.
Yeah.
Which was a big song for him in the 60s. Yeah. Okay, the Writer's Block, I know, is brought to you, of course, by Black Dog Publishing and Custody Bay Books. And I have to tell you that once you finish that last period and you put the end on that manuscript, you ain't done. You got a lot of work to go. You got editing, you got proofreading, you got all kinds of formatting to go, and the guys at Tuscany Bay can give you a hand with that. So if you're interested in writing a book and you don't really know where to take it, give us a call. The number you can call is 805-795-3165. Or you can email us at rpalinelli at Tuscany Bay Books or J. Christina at Tuscany Bay Books, and we damn sure will write you back. And if you're looking for someplace to buy Western wear, then Out West Shop is your online source for top brands that are a reflection of the equestrian and the Western lifestyle. Shop for unique and distinctive apparel, fashion accessories, home decor, and general merchandise. National brands include Rockmount Ranchwear. They're the ones that do the shirts for Longmire.
Oh, okay.
I have one in the back of my car.
Not on someone?
No, in a box.
Oh, okay.
Scully Leather Company and American West Handbags, just to name a few. So if you're interested in getting some of that stuff, you can go online at www.outwestshop.com or you can go to www.scvoutwest.com. And if you enter the code WB for Writer's Block 100, you'll receive $10 off on your order. Or you can call them toll-free, and, of course, they will get a live person, Bobby Jean Bell, or her husband, Jim, will answer the phone. The number there is 877-340-9378. One more, and we get to go to work. Okay. Since 2009, Target Freight has had a full truckload service, TFM truckload, and LTL service that is the best in the industry. Not only are they exceptionally good at what they do, but they work hard to make your full truckload shipping or LTL experience unparalleled using their customized traffic movement program. So call TFM Truckload or Target Freight Management LTL today. 844-653-7789. That gets you to the desk of Mike Petruski, or that's for truckload, or for any of the fine account managers at LTL, you can call 888-653-1323 and tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. Or if you prefer, you can always go shop online. Their website is www.targetfmi.com. Okay.
Whew. That was all a big mouthful for you tonight.
I know. Well, that's kind of my buddy. You never helped me do it, so I had to kind of do it on my own. I'm going to our guest tonight really didn't give me a whole lot of bio. In fact, I'm looking over this, and he didn't give me any bio.
Okay.
Or bile. But
either.
Either one. Gave me a bunch of Vietnamese names. No, only one. So I'm going to just bring him on, and he can kind of tell us himself what he what makes him so great. And will you please welcome to the Writer's Block? That would be Bruce Olav Solheim.
Studio is so crowded with all these people in here, right? Huh?
A lot of applause there. Thank you very much for having
me. We usually
me,
say
Jim.
Thanks for the clap, but...
Yeah. Not for years.
I quit doing that.
Yeah. Jim used to hear that a lot in his younger years.
I really did.
Yeah, so, my bio. It was a short bio. Born in Seattle. Immigrant parents from Norway. Grew up with World War II stories. They lived under Nazi occupation, so grew up with a lot of war stories. Served in the Army. 6 years. Enlisted. I was a jail guard in Germany. I was a helicopter pilot, Fort Bragg, North Carolina. Finished my doctorate in history in 1993. I've been teaching at Citrus College in Glendora since 1998, specializing in the Vietnam War, U.S. history, and married to Ginger, my girl, who's in the studio.
We're waving at her right now. Hi, Ginger.
And, so I've written 8 books, 10 plays, so I'm a playwright, author, and, that's good enough.
Your current book that actually we are doing for you, mm-hmm. that is not due to come out until the end of June.
Right.
And if we don't get your illustrator on the razor, it's going to be a little bit later than that.
I did notice a lot of insert picture here.
Yes, yeah. Coming soon.
Yeah.
Coming soon. It is called Timeless, a personal history.
Yeah.
And it's like an epilogue of Bruce's life from his birth to, he's not dead yet, but to now.
Not yet.
Wait, the show isn't over.
You got a lot of stuff in there. I mean, virtually there is, 29 chapters? I think?
34,
okay.
34 different stories, beginning when I was age 4.
Right.
That's when the paranormal stuff started happening, and it's still happening.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, I selectively pick 34, but I do have other ones that'll be in the second.
The next book.
The next book.
Gotcha.
Yeah, which I call Timeless Deja Vu.
Oh.
So look for that.
I heard that before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. It's deja vu all over again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To quote Yogi Bear.
Yeah, to quote Yogi Bear.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so, I want to step in here for a minute because I had a conversation with Jim earlier today, and I asked him, what do you think of all of this? And Jim, he'll probably tell the story, but he said that he's had some experiences, which I found kind of interesting. And then I read your book, not in that order. And after all this, I'm sitting here thinking, well, maybe there's more to it than coming in saying, I think you guys are loony.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So get on with what. Tell us a little bit about some of this. In fact, what I'd like to ask you is, you said this is still continuing on. Yeah. What's the most recent thing that's happened?
I have occasionally some very remarkable visions.
I thought you were going to tell me Ginger's a ghost.
Not yet.
I'll just tell you one that was in 2016, so just not that long ago. A friend of mine passed away, and we went to Norway, and I didn't have time really to process it. When I came back, I had a vision of him, and a very clear vision of him. And he had some very important things to tell me, but he told me in kind of an unusual way. He was, for one thing, he wasn't wearing any shoes in this vision. And I said, why not wear shoes? And he said, you don't understand, we don't need shoes anymore. I thought, that's kind of weird. I'd never really heard that before in stories that I'd read about, you know.
Or clothes.
He had clothes, but he didn't have shoes. But, I said, well, what can you tell me? And he said, it's all true. And I said, what's all true? He said, it's all true, all of it. And that was it.
That's a big box.
That's very big. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've been doing a lot of reading. One of my favorite psi researchers is a guy named Dean Radin. Mm-hmm. He's the chief scientist at IONS, Institute for Noetic Sciences, started by Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut who had an experience up in space. And I've read a lot about what could be accounting for this, because it's I don't have evidence of it. All I have is my experience. So that's what all these stories are. I'm not really trying to prove anything to anybody. I'm just trying to share what has happened to me. And actually, I was kind of, talking about loony or whatever. I've been reluctant to tell these stories over the years because of my career. And I talked to Dr. Radin about it, and he said that's very common for professional people, academics. They don't want to risk telling these stories for fear that people will think, there's something.
Hurt your reputation.
Yeah, their reputation. And how are they going to take you seriously as a historian or a writer, if a serious historian, if you believe in ghosts or whatever? But he said it's not uncommon as you get closer to retirement. That's the way I felt. Now's the time to tell these stories. So I'm no longer afraid of my peers or
Well, when you're younger, they say you're crazy. As you get older, you just become eccentric.
Right. So. Yeah, but actually, more and more and more people now are having experiences of the paranormal type.
I think it has been increasing. And, the thing is that everybody has them, but not everybody acknowledges it, because some people, I don't want to deal with it.
Or so, knows what they are.
I was going to say, or don't recognize what it
or
is.
Or they don't recognize it, So there's a lot of reasons why it's, not everybody talks about it. But in the book, I encourage people to talk to each other and to talk,
yes, you do.
About these experiences, so we can learn from each other and not be afraid to understand what it is. And Dr. Radin calls it psi. He doesn't call it paranormal. He feels like that kind of has, occultish kind of things, connotations. So he prefers to call it psi. But there's ample evidence that this does exist in terms of laboratory, where they've tested telepathy and telekinesis and all these kinds of things. So I think there's reluctance in the scientific community to accept it. And, it's considered... but then again, you go back in time and, when, Copernicus and Galileo got in a bit of trouble, so he thinks we're on the edge of a new acceptance of psi within the scientific world. And there's plenty of, Nobel laureate scientists who have acknowledged that, that's going to be happening.
I remember in the 50s and 60s and early 70s, the scientists were called parapsychologists.
Yes, and they still call it parapsychology.
Yeah, and it was always weird because they were always on the other outer fringe of the other side, and they were trying to look in, and they actually never did make it very well. But people, normal folks, are the ones that have most of the... As a real quick story, I was when my father was dying, I couldn't get a flight. It was 4th of July weekend. So I took off at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and at 4:30 in the afternoon, I took off heading for Albany, Oregon. And I got up to Corning. I don't know if you know where Corning is.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Well, it's a little wide spot on the side of the road, and there was a truck stop there, and so I was dead tired, so I pulled over. And I crawled in the back seat, and I went to sleep. And I just heard plain as day a voice come to me and say, JL, woke me up. That's what my dad used to call me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking around, and there's no dad there. So I mean, it's like 10 after 12. So what the hell, got back in the driver's seat and took off towards Reading. My sister calls. She says, don't worry, you don't have to hurry. Why? He's gone. Hmm. What time did he die? 12:10. So.
Yeah, at the exact same time.
Yeah. So I don't know if it was him waking me up and telling me or what, but now my mother, we just.
Yeah, this idea of consciousness is, well, that's really where, you know, the studies are at, and this idea of what is consciousness. There's so many people who can't, you know, scientists are having trouble defining what it is. And if you talk to mystics and, you know, Buddhists and stuff, they said there is only one consciousness, and we all collectively have part of it. And if you reach nirvana or you reach enlightenment, then you're one with the universe, which they've been saying for a very long time. But now scientists are coming around to figure out, there is something to this. And when you get into that state where these things happen, where you can do remote viewing or whatever, it is tapping into this collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I was going to say, I'm skeptical, but I have enough open-mindedness to consider things. For an example, I had a girl that was, I was training her to be a dog trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And we had worked together for about 4 months, and she then told me that she was an animal communicator.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I normally don't tell people that, especially not in the beginning.
Right.
And I said, well, tell me more about it. And she says, you know what? When you're in front of a class and you have all your people and their dogs, she goes, you know how the dogs always pay attention to you? And you can take the craziest dog and take the leash, and all of a sudden the dog calms down and pays attention to you? I said, yeah. She goes, I do the same thing. I just don't call it that.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, what is it then? She says, it's all about energy. And we used to do a show called Atomic Dog Radio, and we had this frequent visitor who was she wasn't a communicator, but she, I forgot exactly what she called herself, but she would talk about, you know, seeing or feeling what an animal who had passed was saying to her. And I started thinking about the energy. And then I started realizing, okay, how does this apply to our everyday life, and where do we see the examples of the energy come through?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is that you will have a dog that loves everybody, goes up to every person, goes up to every, like Bella. Bella's like that. Jim's a golden retriever. She's wonderful. But she loves everybody.
She has never met an enemy.
Right. But every once in a while, you'll have one of these dogs, and they'll see another dog, and they want to kill it. And you're like, what's going on? This is not your personality.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started thinking, have you ever been at a party at somebody's home and someone will walk in the front door, you've never seen them, you've never met them, you have no idea who they are, and you just, I don't like that person.
Mm-hmm.
There's something not right about them.
Sure.
What is it that leads you to make that decision? And so, again, it's that energy.
Yeah.
Right? If I said to you, I could see the people through the wall right here in the next room, you would say, I don't buy that at all. And then I take out my infrared camera, and I can see the heat images through the wall. I can't perceive that with my eyes, but that doesn't mean that those wavelengths are not coming through.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's kind of more on that level that mm-hmm. that's why some people can sense these things better than others because they're more in tune with some of the energy or the frequencies. I don't know. I'm kind of throwing that out there.
There's natural talent. I think everybody's got some, but some people have a lot. And then some people can train to get in, like through meditation and other things, mm-hmm. they can get into that state where they can tap into that.
Do you put yourself in that category of having that?
I'm not a meditator, but I can, if you talk to Ginger, she'll tell you I can really have an insane focus, which is what...
So tell me, Ginger, is he insane?
You can't talk or I'm turning on the microphone.
But I can really focus, and everything I know about meditation, it's all about focus.
Bofus?
It's the same with sports, guys that are really good or women that are really good in sports, they call it the zone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes, it's the same thing. Yes.
It's really the same thing as what these meditators do, and they're very skilled at it. Some people are naturally can do it very easily. I just seem to do it, and I especially do it with writing. I get into a zone. I get into that focus, and a whole day will go by, 18 hours, 24 hours. And time has not passed at mm-hmm. all. Mm-hmm. It past, present, it's all just the same.
Mm-hmm. All right, so how do you explain, and in fact, if you could maybe mention a couple of your experiences you've mm-hmm. had over the course
sure.
that you've included in the book, mm-hmm. and kind of explain how you were tuned in with that, if you could.
Well, I started the book by saying that it's not that I believe in ghosts, it's that they believe in me. So it's like, it was an invitation.
Right.
So, yes, I think I am perceptive. But I feel very privileged. But one of the most, I'll tell this story. This is probably one of the most profound ghost experiences. A lot of people like ghost stories, but this is a real one. I was on a job interview in New London, New Hampshire, and it was Colby Sawyer College. And I got there at night, and the guy met me at the where the bus dropped me off and took me to this old, what they called the old academy building. And it was the old college, and it was a women's college at first, from the early 1800s, so it's very old. It looked like something out of a Stephen King novel. it was whitewashed, it had a bell tower, scary trees in front, scraggly looking trees. And he took me in there, and it was an old latch lock, and we walked up these creaky steps, and I got up there, and he said, "This is the room where you'll be staying." And it was antique furniture, beautiful room. And I started to get a weird feeling, and I said, "Is there anybody else staying here?" He said, "No, you're here by yourself. But I'll come pick you up in the morning, and for the interview." So so that night, I brushed my teeth. I was lying down in bed reading a book. I think I was reading The Tin Drum by Günter Grass. I still remember reading that book. And all of a sudden, I heard some noises downstairs.
Right.
I thought the guy had come back. I thought, okay, guy came back. What is he? So I went down there. "Hey, hello," whatever your name was. I forgot his name. And no, nobody down there. I went down, checked it out, nobody. So I came back up, read my book again. More noises, more voices, like more people, chairs moving around. So I went down there again. Didn't see anybody, didn't see anything. Went back to bed. Once again, the noises started again. Chairs, people moving around. An old Victrola sound.
Right.
It's like, it was very, very frightening. So I thought, am I dreaming or something? So I called my ex-wife now. I called her and I said, "I just want to make sure that this is real time, and everything." And I said, "This is what's happening." And, more voices, more sounds, like there was lots of people downstairs. And she said, "Get out," which is the classic response,
yes.
"Get out." I said, I can't get out. Where am I going to go? It's the middle of the night. I can't go anywhere. So I just hunkered down, And then the next morning, I went out and got my... I survived the night, obviously. And then the next morning, I went and got... I was going to get some coffee, and there was this old street sweeper out there sweeping, the old sidewalks there. And he said, I can't do the New England accent, but, you're a stranger. And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "What are you here for?" I said, "I'm here for an interview." And he said, where are you staying?" I said, "In the old academy building." He said, "Did they tell you it's haunted?" And I said, "No, they didn't tell me anything."
They didn't have to.
I'm pretty sure that's true. So, So, and then the next, I had to stay another night there. I never mentioned anything to the interviewers because I figured maybe it's a test, you know, to see if I could survive. Maybe I'll get the job.
This guy's done out.
So then the next night, same thing, started up again. I go, oh, here we go again. How am I going to make it? And this time I saw an apparition, you know, a full-bodied apparition in the corner of the room. And it was an old woman, the all black, the hood or the bonnet or whatever. And she was just looking at me, and she stayed there. And I said, I don't mean you any harm, whoever you are, you know. And she eventually went away. And then when she went away, the noises went away. So the next morning I got up, and I went and looked around up there, and there were these old portraits, you know, of these old people that had founded the college. It turned out, I looked at one portrait, and I said, oh, that's the woman I saw. It's Susan Colby. She's the founder of the college.
So she's still there.
She's still there, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, now what they did is they sold it to the city, and the city revamped the whole place. But there's still, you know, reports of hauntings.
Mm-hmm.
There.
Mm-hmm.
They took a lot of stuff out of there and put it in a museum, and there's hauntings there too. So it's part of it is stuff, part of it's the residual energy there. But that was one of the most profound experiences I had, and clearly I was tapping into something there. And that I looked it up online, and there's been lots of people that have had that experience.
Wow.
A lot of in fact, I found out the lady who was interviewed before me the week before went screaming out into the night, and they had to put her up somewhere else because she couldn't take it.
Okay, now I have to ask. Did you poop your pants?
I came close. It was pretty scary, but I figured, okay, I want this job really
badly. I have actually been scared that badly before.
I've come close.
And not to poop my pants, but I mean, been scared by an app. We saw one when I was like 15 come out of a ditch and come up the street,
mm-hmm.
and all in black. And we could, no matter who went around her,
mm-hmm.
you couldn't see any face. All it was just like a cloak.
Right, right.
And it was just...
Yeah.
And we didn't see where it went. I don't know, he, she, it. Mm-hmm. Didn't see where it went. But years later in Vietnam, I saw the same thing. I assumed at that point somebody was going to croak.
There's a lot of ghosts in Vietnam.
Yeah,
Vietnamese culture is filled, I mean, especially after the war.
But not in black cloaks.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
Okay, now I want to follow here. This to me, I'm hearing a contradiction. Okay, mm-hmm. one of them being that this guy had no shoes, and, oh, we don't need shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, every time you hear about someone seeing a ghost,
mm-hmm.
they're in clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they wearing clothes?
Because that's what they died in.
It's hard to say.
Just ask them.
But they don't need them.
They'll tell you if you ask them.
Well, they're not talking to me.
Well, but you don't know that. I have one that lives in my hallway.
Yeah.
And it's a woman, and mm-hmm. she's a blonde, and she wears this white flowing like nightgown.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then, I'll catch her peeking around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can see her plain as day. She's right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one night, she scared me so bad one Sunday afternoon, I jumped up off the couch and went chasing her down the hallway
mm-hmm.
and lost her around the corner. But it was so cold in that hallway. It was like it was like a freezer, a meat locker in there. And it was just, all the energy was gone. It was, you know, all the heat was gone. And it was just all icy cold in there. And that's when I still had Brittany, my Rottweiler,
mm-hmm.
and she used to go in the living room, and we'd watch her growl,
mm-hmm.
watch things cross in the living room, and she'd follow it.
I've heard that before, and I think I heard you tell that story, and I've heard of stories about that, too, that animals seem to sense some of these things.
I think they have more sense than we do.
They probably do.
Yeah. And then we have a motion light in our entryway mm-hmm. that goes on occasionally for... No reason. It just goes on.
Yeah. A lot of these, I mean, you know, experiences, you know, there's this idea, you know, do you believe in ghosts? Well, I really do think it's, if you've experienced it, it's not a matter of belief. It's just, it's happened.
It's happened.
Yeah,
it's happened to me.
People either believe
you or they don't. And
that's fine.
Anymore, I mean, people don't think you're crazy because, you know, eventually it's going to happen to them. Let me get this out of the way,
sure.
And then we'll go back and we'll get you, let's see, what are we going to do here? Oh, this is it right here. Imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees, and a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect vacation spot? It is. For your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you were going away for one night or two nights or a getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dog returns home, you'll have to ask whose vacation was better and whose vacation was better, Russ?
Not mine.
The dogs. So check out their website, alldogsrule.com, or give them a call, 805-524-1100. Your dog will thank you. I will thank you. Russ, of course, will thank you. And Karen will thank you. And, of course, us at the Writer's Block will thank you. And it is now 7:29, and we are in the studio with Russ Avison and, of course, Bruce Olaf Solheim, and we're talking about his book, Timeless, A Paranormal Personal History.
By the way, I want to mention, don't you have a son named Bjorn?
Yes.
I just, you turned him back on.
Yeah. There you go.
I was just going to say, as soon as I saw that in the book, I have three clients that have dogs named Bjorn. And one in particular is a Norwegian elk hound named Bjorn. And I just it just made that association. Yeah. It's a great name because everybody, when they see it written down, they say Bjorn.
Bjorn, yeah. Well, if you are interested in calling and talking to Bruce this evening about paranormal or about anything you want to talk about, because he's a history guy, number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Back to paranormal. Your book runs in a, it's almost like, well, of course it is a personal history for you, but it's almost like your paranormal experiences are mostly around your family members or because of your family members. And I found that throughout the book, that was a theme that ran throughout your whole book.
Yeah.
So, is that something you meant to do, or is it just happened that way?
No, that's just the way it came out. I think that, with my mother, for instance, my mother and I had a special connection that kind of freaked my father out. He wasn't into any kind of, this kind of stuff. He was very practical Norwegian fisherman, carpenter, and my mom was an artist. She was more mystical in that regard, and I think I have a story in there about we were have a deck of cards and we were trying to read each other's mind and we did pretty well, enough to where Dad got very upset about it and he told us to stop and knock it up. So, but the thing is about these things is that, and it's probably a good thing, I was talking to Ginger about that the other day, that these things happen to people but they don't happen all the time and you can't really control it
can't.
And what you can control, those that are the most skilled, you know, the ones that actually work for the government, Operation Stargate or whatever it was, when they used remote viewers to try to spy on the Russians and stuff. There is proof that this actually did work, but it's not like it is in the movies, you know, where it's all, you know, so dramatic and
just
clear. It's but it is something. It is something, and it has been used by our government. But so the thing is that it's these experiences for me are very profound, but they're random. They happen fairly often, but I can't like say, okay, I'm going to make it happen right now. You know, I can't like who's that guy, the spoon bending guy, Uri Geller.
Oh, Uri Geller, yeah.
So you know, that's a little bit of stage magic there probably too. But the idea is that I think it's very difficult to control it like that. I don't think we're advanced enough. And it's probably a good thing, like I told Ginger, if we were that advanced, could you imagine we probably wouldn't last very long. Somebody would be doing all kinds of stuff, and the world would probably end.
Well, we get a bunch of naked ghosts out there running around.
Well, I still, you know, that still is something that's not sitting right in my mind. And that is that, why would they be enclosed? Why would they take on a form that's human if they're no longer in existence?
Because it's what you recognize.
There's different forms. The consciousness, in my view, and having read Dr. Radin's books, you know, all of his books now, latest one is called Real Magic. It's a pretty cool book. Just finished it. This consciousness, it can take on any form. That's the thing. It could take on somebody that looks like somebody that has clothes or doesn't have clothes, or it could just be a dark object, you know, or like a cloaked person, or, mm-hmm. or you know, a dark person or whatever. So I think
cousin it. I was just thinking of all
take,
the air.
Well, take on different things. It could inhabit something. I had a very scary experience in Germany with a, you know, this is a good example of don't mess around with things you don't understand.
Right.
You know? And I knew a little bit about this stuff. So anyway, I was making a demon head.
Right.
Oh, this is cool. I'm going to make a demon head, and I'm going to put it here, and I'm going to put some candles around it, and I was goofing around with it. And, you know, I was looking at it, and I was, you know, thinking, this thing looks pretty real. All of a sudden, and, you know, its lips started to move, and it's made out of clay, right? So it's... And it freaked me out. It freaked me out so bad I had to throw this thing away, you know.
I would have thrown it away, too.
You should never, you know, it's the same idea with these, you know, Ouija boards and things like that. If you're, you shouldn't really mess around with stuff unless it's, you know what's going on or you know how to handle it.
Yeah. I've refused to have one in my house. Ouija board.
I think there are, you know, there's some things there that we don't quite understand. But to answer your question, I think these things can come in many different forms, and how you perceive them or how you see them, and I think that might explain it. Why, I don't know. Like my mother, when I saw her in a vision, the story I call it the Golden Mom. She came to me and in a vision, and she was golden, you know, like herself, but she was like shimmering in gold, and only thing she said to me is there is a heaven, and that's all. And my mother was a religious lady, you know, not like a go to church religious lady, but spiritual and believed in God. And that was the message she had for me. That was, you know, what was important for her to tell me. Just like my friend Gene, who told me, you know,
it's all true.
It's all true. And I forgot to mention this other part about Gene. He said. I said, what's it like to be dead? You know, that's a good question. You know,
sure.
What's it like to be dead? And he said, I don't really feel like I am, which I thought was an interesting response. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like I'm dead. He said, it was, and this is where the name Timeless comes from. He said, there really, where I am now, I just am. There's no past. There's no future. There's just now.
Existence.
It's just existence. I'm just here, and that's what it is. So then I got this idea that because I've had some near-death experiences that I think that we are timeless, that you know, that we all fear death so much. It's our greatest fear. Well, I guess public speaking is number one. Number two is death.
Death.
that's what they say. So speaking about death must be really terrifying, I would think.
Yeah.
But you know, this idea that, you know, that we are timeless, and I don't think we should be afraid. I mean, we should live our life, not, you know, take our life or something, but just live our life the best we can, and I don't think we should be afraid. I have this feeling, based on these experiences that I've had, that we shouldn't be afraid. You know, we live our life the best we can, and I think we do exist beyond that.
I think the fear is more of the experience of dying,
painful death or something, yeah,
than it is of the afterlife. I think, to a degree, I think everybody believes there's something after we're here. Mm-hmm. Whether it's
almost
you turn into a frog or a cloud or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I don't know.
And there's no atheists in a foxhole, right? Is
no, there's not. As a matter of fact, you say Jesus Christ a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you, I don't know if you remember, there was a Burt Reynolds film, and I can't recall the name of it, but it was about he was trying to kill himself.
Yeah.
And there was one point when he was swimming, he was going to drown. He was just swimming out there. And all of a sudden, he started realizing that maybe life was worth living.
Mm-hmm.
So as he's swimming back to shore, he's telling God, please just get me back to shore. Mm-hmm. I will come to church every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And as he's getting closer to shore, he starts changing. Well, at least every other Sunday, I'll be there.
Yeah.
And as he finally got there, says, well, you know, we'll figure it out.
we'll talk.
You got to bargain a little bit.
Yeah, but this is like in the foxhole. When you're in the foxhole,
Yeah.
I get a question.
Yep.
Do you know of anyone who has seen animals that have come back in visions? A dog, a pet, just anything.
Yes, that does happen. I'm trying to think if I have. Have I seen animals?
We've heard growling in our house. When, like, the dog is
asleep. When you haven't eaten.
No. I was up, it was like 3:30 in the morning, and I know the dog was in bed, Jerry was in bed.
Mm-hmm.
She's on the ground, but I was from the living room, plain as day, this growl, and I mean a deep, menacing growl. What do you do? You know, get up and look, nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have heard it a couple times, but not at the same time. I mean, you know, right. Like about a year apart, but it
yeah,
doesn't happen anymore.
I have heard of that. I've heard stories of that and read stories of spirit animals or animals that are, you know, from the beyond, and people have seen those and or have felt their presence or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I have heard of that. Yeah, and
well, I
doubt them.
Yeah. My dog Whisper. I was very close with her. Mm-hmm. I was there when she was born. I was there when she died,
mm-hmm.
and after she died, there was probably a period, I'll bet 6 months, I never had a dream about her.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember one night having this dream, and in the dream I was thinking, oh, you came back to visit me. And, you know, and I mm-hmm. knew that she had been dead, but there she was with mm-hmm. me. But, again, that's a dream. That's something that's manufactured
right.
in my brain. Mm-hmm. And when you think about our consciousness, if mm-hmm. you go just from the scientific side of things, mm-hmm. it's all about chemistry. That's all our brains are. It's a bunch of chemistry going on
sure.
there. So how do we know these things that you see and sense aren't that same sort of thing where it's just manufactured in your brain?
Well, there's different views on consciousness. There is the very reductionist view. You know, a lot of scientists say that exactly that, electrochemical. You mm-hmm. know, these are illusions, like near-death experiences,
right, exactly.
which is a very good example, maybe segue into that.
Mm-hmm.
The, you know, doctors have documented this, that patients that have had cardiac arrest see the scene, you know, that's going
from
on
above.
From above,
mm-hmm.
and then they report in great detail, even though they're clinically dead, in great detail what has happened.
You have a call.
I have a call.
You have a call.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
You have a call.
Hold that thought, though.
I'm holding it.
Okay.
<right here. laughs>
The Writer's Block. Who am I speaking to?
You're speaking to Henry Park.
Oh, my God. Henry Park.
Of all people.
This is our traveling, our roving reporter. What's going on, Henry?
Well, I continue to roam aimlessly.
That's good.
But it was great to roam over to the Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival and see everyone this past weekend.
Yeah, except that the attendance was way down, I think.
You know, was it? It didn't seem substantially heavier. I noticed that because I was thinking it's free. So I thought it would be a bigger turnout.
That's what I thought, but apparently it wasn't. We were in a bad spot, though.
If I'd known that, I would have been there.
There you go.
Free.
It was free.
Yeah,
right. I mean, we said that every week for how many weeks, Henry? Months.
Oh, 15, 16.
Well, I'm a little
made
slow on the uptake.
The world.
Well, say hello to Bruce. He's sitting right here next to me.
Hello, Bruce. I've been enjoying your spooky talk.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you,
you
very
bet.
Much.
You think the talk's spooky, you ought to see him.
Yeah.
I'm a little
well, actually,
tonight.
we have Bruce and his wife, Ginger.
Yeah.
There's a reason Ginger's over here being quiet, because she's looking at him like she's going to smack him if he keeps telling all these lies. So what do you got for me, Henry?
Well, I was wondering, did you talk to Johnny Crawford at the Cowboy Festival?
Many times. He hung out by our table Sunday afternoon, or Sunday morning, I'd say around 11 to 1 o'clock.
Right. Do you know how... Let me try that again. A big anniversary is coming up on The Rifleman. Do you know how many years ago that premiered?
40? 50? Oh,
it's got to be at least 50.
60.
I was going to guess 60.
60 years this September.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I knew it was 58 that it started, so.
Right.
Wow.
And, of course, he was just back from West Virginia, where he was shooting a new Western, Bill Tillman and the Outlaws. And where? What more perfect place to meet him than Hart Park? Because he plays William S. Hart in the picture.
Oh, there you go. If he can remember his lines.
That's, well, you don't have to actually talk in silence, but...
that's true. That's true.
But you lost me there for a second, but I got you. I'm probably the only Western crazy who has not seen the first episode of Westworld's new season.
I saw
don't
it.
Tell me about what happens, but how was it?
It was really good. It's different. It's going to be a different series this year.
I see. Yeah. Well, I hope it's still got some Western elements.
There you go.
I would have seen it, but I've been up to my ears in True West articles and Roundup articles and preparing for tomorrow. Tomorrow, our old buddy Court Joyner and I are going to be recording commentary.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
In
fact,
Western,
I spoke with Court about that Sunday.
Right. Yeah, great titles. I Am Sartana, Your Angel of Death, and hey, this actually goes along with your show. Have a good funeral, my friend. Sartana will pay.
Hey, look, Henry, can I get you to call in next week? We're right in the middle of a conversation, and it would be a lot cooler if we could do that.
I will be happy to.
Thank you, my friend.
I'll enjoy listening to the rest of the conversation.
Oh,
have a good
perfect.
Night, gentlemen.
Thank you so much. Good night, Henry.
You bet. Good night.
Henry usually calls in about every other week and mm-hmm. kind of gives us an update on what's going on in the Western world.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we were holding a thought on near-death experiences.
Right, and the last thing you said is about when people have reported seeing it from above, like when they die, and then they describe it in great detail.
Yeah, they describe it. So if it's the brain chemical illusion that, you know, they see a light or that, you know, that kind of stuff, that's mm-hmm. a classic description, there's no way they could describe all the action of what's going on from that perch, you know, from that position. So that's in the book Real Magic by Dean Radin. He mm-hmm. he talks about that. So I think there's evidence to indicate that there is something going on there that we're not quite sure of. And if you look at there have been a lot of research on you know, when people are clinically dead and their brain waves continue to go beyond death too for quite a while, sometimes up to a half an hour.
Really?
They can measure that. So it's not completely gone.
Yeah, there was a thing
fascinating.
An article this week, yesterday maybe, about on the internet about near-death experiences mm-hmm. and a lot how people see them and because they've been experimenting with animals mm-hmm. and now they're finding out that humans are exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. That the neurons, as they dissolve and they start firing all over the place, they get out of sync and they just go crazy. I don't know. Yeah. I know. When I died in the ambulance in Pittsburgh, I didn't see anything. I saw black.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember Do you remember actually going into that?
I remember going into black.
You do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then waking up or slowly?
I was waking up with Jeff, my best friend, and mm-hmm. the ambulance mm-hmm. attendant slapping the holy crap out of me, saying, nobody dives in my freaking ambulance.
Okay. All right.
And shooting nitroglycerin in my cheek.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, you look at this. You're a very popular guy tonight.
Oh.
This is the Writer's Block. You're on with Bruce Solheim. Who am I speaking to?
This is Mel.
Okay. Oh, hi, Mel. Are you a friend of Bruce's?
She's a friend of
it's Mel.
of mine and Ginger's.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I've been listening to it, and when is the book coming out? After the illustrations are done, how soon?
Well, yeah, that's going to be that's the big question at this point. It's
okay.
We have got everything together and ready to go. We're just looking for illustrations now, and final proof and proofreading, and it should be ready to go. I would say the end of June, which is the target
date.
Well,
that's okay. It'll be before your class.
Oh, yeah, I didn't
mention. Oh, that's right. You're using this book for your class.
Yeah, I'm going to, in the fall at Citrus College, I'm going to teach a community ed class with the same title, Paranormal Personal History. So I think it'll be an interesting group of students that take the class. It's not for credit. So.
Guarantee you.
Yeah,
me too.
I would guarantee you.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, I'll be there.
Okay, good.
Good.
Very good. Thank you, Mel.
Well, it was wonderful listening to you on the radio.
Thanks for calling in.
Yes. Oh, are you kidding? Yes.
Well, Mel,
you put my teeth in the
top. Oh, there you go. Well, you just have yourself a wonderful, wonderful time. And you know what? Pour a little more bourbon in that glass and sit back and relax.
I just beer.
Okay, well, that too.
Yeah, she's a beer drinker, then.
Okay.
And I've been doing my beer all day.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Mel.
Oh, yeah.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye.
You know, we're out of time.
Oh, man.
We got about 3 minutes left.
Yeah.
I know. The hour just shoots by. 50 minutes just shoots by.
It does, yeah.
It shoots by. Tell us, give me a couple titles of some of the other stuff you've written. I know a couple of them are Vietnam books.
Yeah, I wrote a book about the Vietnam War, and it's called The Vietnam War Era, A Personal Journey. Mm-hmm. So my whole idea in history is personal.
Right.
And the theory behind it that I have is that, like when America goes to war, we say America goes to war, but really America doesn't go to war.
No.
Individual Americans go to war.
Right.
So it's that
the
personal.
The youth of America goes to war.
Yes, it's that, young people do all the fighting. But it's that idea of individual history. So that's what I stress with my my students. I just wrote a textbook. I never meant to write a U.S. History Survey textbook, but I wrote one called Making History. Once again, the personal thing. We're the ones who make history, all of us. And I used the same illustrator to do comic book pages in that book.
Okay.
So I like to mix my interests, you know, history.
And how long did it take him to get those illustrations done?
Yeah, it was about a year and a half.
Well, he's been sick. Now, he does have an excuse.
Sick. Yeah, he was sick, yeah.
He does have an excuse.
Yeah.
They can find your other stuff on Amazon, because I did today, or on your website.
Yes.
And that is
BruceOlafSolheim.com.
Right.
Yeah. Or Amazon.
And then you find his email address and everything there on Amazon and on his website.
Yeah.
And come back and see us, please.
Yes.
If I have a cancellation, I will call you.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'll get you in here again.
Deja vu.
Because I'm not done. I'm not done with you, pal.
Okay. Very nice. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for joining us tonight. Next week, we have writer Mike Papantonio, who is he's an attorney. I guess he's a really good attorney, and he writes thrillers. And the one I'm reading right now is really good. So it's like almost 400 pages. I had to get a jump start on it. And we've got a good lineup coming next month, and month after, and the month after, and the month after, and the month after. We are actually booked through December of this year.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, we have some really good writers coming in. Bob Brill from KNX Radio will be here. And
cool.
So, and then on the 17th of May, we jump-start a new radio show called KWTF Radio. And it'll be on at 6 o'clock on Thursday nights right here at LA Talk Radio.
Does that stand for something?
It does. What the
Which
frick?
Is?
What the frick?
Okay.
But it won't be what the frick when we're next door doing WTF Radio.
Gotcha.
So, anyway, we'll be talking about anything and everything, and whoever wants to call in can call in. If you want to walk into the studio, I don't care. Come in and visit. We'll be glad to have you. Again, Bruce, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
It's been great having you, and we didn't get through everything we wanted to get through, but, hey, we got through a lot.
Yeah.
Russ, always good seeing you, pal.
Same here. Thank you.
And this is another Tuesday or Thursday night that we have shot pretty much in butt. So with that being said, we are going to be out of here, and we invite you to come back next Thursday for LA Talk Radio's Writer's Block. It is myself, Jim Christina, Russ Avison, Richard Polinelli, and Bobby Jean Bell, all saying thanks for listening.